Welcome, one. Welcome, all. Thanks for joining us today. This is Town Call, a brand new approach to homegrown radio, where you are the star, you are the talent, and you will drive the talking points of the day. If you'd like to participate in today's forum, give us a call or shoot us a text, 844-967-2789, or take the show with you on the go. Download the Civic Media app. You can engage with us right from the app. You can call, you can text, you can connect with Town Call. Head over to the Apple App Store or Google Play Store, type in Civic Media. It's free, it's easy to download, and it's Thursday, October 19th. We are joined by Professor John Shelton for our usual office hours segment. Of course, Luke Mathers and Aaron Zommers are joining me today as well. Gentlemen, how are we doing this Thursday afternoon? I'll start with you, Professor Shelton.
I'm doing great. It's a good time to be alive. I'm saying that a little bit
sarcastically.
No, but I mean, there's obviously a lot of bad things happening internationally and in the UW system, which we'll get into. But I'm very excited about the fact that my good friend and fellow union president from UW River Falls, Neil Krause, is going to be giving a talk here at UW Green Bay tonight. So if you're in Northeast Wisconsin, head on over here at 7 o'clock. There's also going to be a live stream, which we're going to be sharing on the social media outlets here. So you can check that out. And Neil's talk is on a book called The Fantasy Economy. And it's a book that just came out. And what Neil shows is that education reformers have been basically painting a false portrait of how education, and especially higher education, can overcome all of the big structural inequalities that exist in our labor markets, right? So that's the fantasy. If you're expecting a sexier version of fantasy, that's not in the offing. But anyway, that's how I am, and I hope you can join us or check it out. Good to see y'all.
And we'll be able to share that link as well. It is that's currently up talk. On the screen, but we'll share that in the comments for yes. the video as well.
It so is in the comments. However, our streaming service that we use only lets us comment it on Facebook. I will go and put it on Twitter as well. But
there we go.
Facebook, so it's already in the comments.
We will share that talk out, that link for the talk out. 7 p.m., you said, Professor?
7 p.m. in the Widener Center at UW Green Bay.
There we go. When we're thrilled to have you here on Town Call. Folks, if you want to join us and the professor for our edition of Office Hours here on this Thursday afternoon, 844-967-2789. But yes, lots of hectic things going on. President Biden in Israel yesterday. We have a speakerless House of Representatives because they have yet to be able to find a vote. Will, you wanted to share an update. We were tracking that on the air yesterday. Where are we at with the House of Representatives and its leadership?
Yeah, we've been tracking that all week, and Jim Jordan currently sits at 0-3, so it's a bit of a deep hole to dig himself out of. I don't know if it's 1-14 yet, if he's going to be able to match that. I'll still take the under on that. But according to the AP, GOP's Jim Jordan...
Of course you're going to take the under, because this headline right now that's coming.
Well, no, it's not his headline. He's not winning this vote. GOP's Jim Jordan will back a temporary House speaker as he tries to show up support, lawmakers say. Refusing to drop out, Republican Rep. Jim Jordan told GOP colleagues Thursday he would back a temporary U.S. House speaker for the next several months as he works to shore up support to win the gavel himself. Jordan delivered the message at a closed-door meeting at the Capitol as the Republican majority considered an extraordinary plan to give the interim speaker pro tempore Rep. Patrick McHenry more powers to reopen the House and conduct crucial business until January. This is according to Republicans who attended the private meeting and insisted on anonymity to discuss it. The House was convening at midday Thursday, but it's doubtful now that Jordan will immediately try again to win a vote to become speaker. The hard-fighting ally of Donald Trump has been unable to win, but he and his far-right allies won't step aside for a more viable GOP nominee. Now, this was according to the Associated Press. I want to note, Luke and Professor Shelton, how so many of these issues are kind of intertwined. We've discussed the look from a national perspective on how disorganized and frankly chaotic the Republican Party appears to be when they can't even elect a speaker for themselves. As Luke noted yesterday, Jim Jordan's total votes are going down. I read a piece yesterday that discussed how some of his Republican colleagues have been staggering their yes and no votes to make it appear like he has more support than he really does, while each consecutive vote then individuals who hadn't voted no the previous time vote no. And that's why he went from, 200 to 198 down to, he's losing support essentially every vote, which is kind of the exact opposite of what you want when you're trying to whip these votes into position. But there was another piece of national news that I'd like to hear your thoughts, gentlemen. Sidney Powell this morning pled guilty in case over efforts to overturn Trump's Georgia loss. She only got probation as a lawyer for the Trump administration, having pled guilty to these reduced charges, becoming the second defendant in the sprawling case to reach a deal with prosecutors. She was charged alongside Trump and 17 others with violating the state's anti-racketeering law, entering the plea just a day before the jury selection was set to start in her trial. She pled guilty to 6 misdemeanors, accusing her of conspiring to intentionally interfere with the performance of election duties. As part of the deal, she will serve 6 years of probation, be fined $6,000, and will have to write an apology letter to Georgia and its residents. She also agreed to testify truthfully against her co-defendants at future trials. That is the big point that I wanted to note, because let's be brutally honest, trying to overturn a presidential election and only getting 6 years of probation and a $6,000 fine plus writing an apology letter, like, that's ridiculous. To me, that just screams the cost of doing business. We have these conversations all the time when it comes to corporate regulations. Oh, you know, X company saved $10 million by illegally dumping their waste and they're fined $1 million. Okay, well, that's just the cost of doing business then. You're incentivizing them to keep breaking the law. But Powell is getting some repercussions for her actions, while another ardent supporter of President Donald Trump, the ringleader in the House of Representatives for his effort to overturn the 2020 election, is now running for Speaker. Granted, he continues to lose support, but this kind of, you know, the comparison of these two situations of two individuals who were directly involved in an attempt to usurp American democracy, I think it just kind of shows how far we've strayed from what is considered, you know, proper election performance and the way that these officials are supposed to represent their constituents. What are your thoughts, gentlemen? I'll start with you, Professor Shelton.
All right. So first of all, I have a lot of thoughts, but I got to get a couple of trivial things out of the way first. Okay. Patrick McHenry, right? Is he the guy who said, give me McLiberty or give me McDeath?
I think there was something in a 30-second commercial spot that said something about that. Maybe.
Oh, okay, good. All right, because somebody's got to make that joke. That's number one.
We're getting our McHenry's confused.
Number
You're getting
two,
them confused.
Number two, I'm thinking about that apology letter that Sidney Powell has to write to the citizens of Georgia or whatever. And I mean, did you all have to do this when you were in school, where you would have to like write a 500 word apology letter or a 500 word essay? I picture her basically saying like, And in conclusion, I am very, 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 very sorry.
Just to get to that word threshold, yeah, just squeezing out the varies.
I was picturing the South Park episode where they joke with the CEO of BP, and he's like hanging out with cute, adorably animals, and he just looks at the camera and goes, "We're sorry," and then it goes to another image of him doing something that's considered, you know, nice. "We're sorry," like that's what I'm picturing. But I kind of like your representation better.
The other thing is, you could just—I mean, I'm sure you could just go to a chatbot and say, "Write me a 500-word apology letter to the citizens of Georgia for trying to rig the election, for trying to conspire to steal the election."
Easy.
Look, you got to laugh at this stuff. Because, you know, I think connecting these two things makes a lot of sense, right? And, you know, here you have a party, the Republican Party, that is a party that really isn't interested in doing anything other than blowing stuff up, right? I mean, they're the Joker from the Batman franchise, really, in a lot of ways. You know, they don't have a serious governing ideology other than chaos and self-aggrandizement, you know, for each of them. I mean, that's Jim Jordan's interest here, right? You know, the same thing with Trump. It's we're going to find a way to conspire to overthrow the results of an election, because this is about our person and having him win at all costs. And you know, it would be really funny if it weren't so sad that like this is Congress, right? Like we don't have a speaker in Congress right now, and thankfully it looks like maybe we'll have this Patrick McHenry as some kind of compromise so that we can have baseline sort of function. But that's where we are. And you know, I teach a class called Historical Perspectives on American Democracy, and as part of that class, I have students bring in, you know, a current events article each week, whoever is leading the discussion that week. And one of my students, a very good student, brought in an article about the speakership, and this was news to a lot of the students in my class. And there looks of just horror that, like, this is how this institution that is supposed to be making legislation that's going to benefit Americans and solve problems, that this is what's happening. They were just abhorrent that this was happening. And so that's where we are. It's pretty frustrating. And, you know, it just kind of seems like this is going to be the status quo until all the reasonable people in this country, all the folks on the left, frankly, figure out a way to organize and take back our governments so that we can finally have a government that's responsible to the people of this country who actually want to get things done.
Agreed completely.
Folks, you are listening to Town Call. We are joined by Professor John Shelton here on Office Hours. Looks like Will, did you just use a chatbot during that to get it?
I did, in fact, use a chatbot. I wanted to prove Professor Shelton's point that it took quite literally 30 seconds. I wrote the prompt as, "I'm a lawyer that tried to overturn a presidential election. Could you write an apology letter to the people of Georgia?"
Oh, my goodness.
And I got that back in 30 seconds. So thank you, ChatGPT. You have changed the world.
Dear fellow Georgians, I hope this letter finds you well and in good spirits.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm writing to extend my sincerest apologies to each and every one of you.
There you go. There's the entirety of it.
Oh, geez. Folks, if you've got a question for Professor John Shelton, you want to share your thoughts on what's going on in the world or the nation, or we're going to get to some local headlines as well when it comes to education and labor here in Wisconsin. But you can share your thoughts. 844-967-2789. As Will said, you can also download the Civic Media app, engage with the show right from the app, or you can do it the old-fashioned way. Call or text 844-967-2789. And hopefully we'll have enough time. And if everybody did their homework, I'm glad that I reminded we got some fantasy football picks as well, Will. So we'll get into those a little bit later.
For the first time ever, Luke did, in fact, do his homework while Professor and I did not. But that's all right, because we gave ourselves plenty of time. We're ready to go. I got my lock and flyer in. And I know Professor Shelton will as well. So we're going to move on to the next piece of news that I wanted to cover today. Let's take a brief detour, actually, because I want to note this as well, Professor, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this before we get into the meat and potatoes conversation in the next segment. So we've been discussing the Wisconsin Supreme Court, right? The advisory panel that Robin Voss presented. We heard from Justices Prosser and Wilcox, but we had not yet heard from former Supreme Court Justice Patience Rogensack. Of course, this was the individual who retired, opening up the seat for Janet Protasiewicz. And I have some fun little tidbits on her thoughts on the attempts to impeach Janet Protasiewicz that we will be getting to right after the break. This is Town Call. If you have a question, comment, or concern for the professor, we're here all Thursday afternoon for office hours, and we're going to be right back. Welcome one, welcome all, welcome back. This is Town Call, a brand new approach to homegrown radio. If you'd like to participate in today's forum, give us a call, shoot us a text, 844-967-2789, or take the show with you on the go. Download the Civic Media app. You can engage with us right from the app. You can call, you can text, you can connect with Town Call. Head over to the Apple App Store or Google Play Store, type in Civic Media. It's free, it's easy to download. It's Thursday, October 19th, and the professor is in. We are joined by Professor John Shelton for today's Office Hours segment. And Professor, before we get into the meat and potatoes conversation of the day, I want to finish up noting the former Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice who, as I announced before the show, was seeking to be removed from the potential lawsuit related to advice she gave about possible impeachment of a current liberal justice. That has since been confirmed. A former Wisconsin Supreme Court justice who fought a subpoena ordering her to appear in court related to advice she gave will not have to provide testimony A judge ruled Wednesday Dane County Circuit Judge Frank Remington decided against holding a hearing where evidence would be taken from the former justice and others. Instead, Remington told attorneys he will first hear arguments on whether the lawsuit alleging open meetings violations, should be dismissed. Republican lawmakers have threatened possible impeachment of current Justice Protasiewicz related to comments she made during the campaign, calling GOP-drawn legislative maps rigged and unfair. She joined with a liberal majority in the court in agreeing to hear a lawsuit supported by Democrats that seeks to overturn the GOP maps and enact new ones. Of course, Wisconsin Republican Assembly Speaker Robin Voss asked three former conservative Supreme Court justices for advice on impeachment. Two of the three, David Prosser, Justice Wilcox, told him that impeaching Protasiewicz was not warranted, while the third, former Chief Justice Patience Rogensack, again, whose position was filled by Janet Protasiewicz, has not said what her advice was. Voss has repeatedly refused to disclose it. All three of the former justices have said that they only met once and each acted independently. There was a very interesting note from the AP piece as well that Rogensack said that Voss, asking for her advice on impeachment, she told him that she had been researching the issue on her own, quote, because I found the topic to be interesting and because I had not previously considered the standards for impeachment of a Supreme Court justice, unquote. That's hilarious when you consider what has gone on at the Wisconsin Supreme Court for the past 10-ish years and how a number of cases have been put before them where there have been conflicts of interest or other Supreme Court justices who have received direct funding from individuals who have been put before their court. And now, because they are no longer in the majority, these conservative officials are turning around and saying, like, hang on, wait a minute, now I have a problem with this. This is unacceptable.
Yeah. Is there any way this can end in her writing an apology letter to anybody? Because that would be awesome.
We just
dang it, John. I got to fire OpenAI up again. All right, I'll get you another one.
How easy it is for ChatGPT to crank those out, though. So that's not necessarily a good threshold for what we should expect from these individuals.
But no, I mean, look, this is the right, in this country, right? I mean, it's like everything is projection for things that they've done. I mean, you nailed it, Will. I mean, you've had a state Supreme Court that has had it's been rife with conflicts of interest and, justices saying things about their position before they get elected, Brian Hagedorn talking about his views on LGBTQ people. Now, granted, it's not while he was running for election, but it's like, these are things that the voters clearly know how you're going to rule on things based on things that you're going to say. And, to be honest, like, I think voters should have as much information as possible. No judge should say that they would a priori rule a certain way in a particular case, but there's nothing wrong with them, telling you sort of where they stand on things values wise. And that's, from my understanding, all Protasiewicz did. But, it's just like, and this might be a nice transition into the UW system stuff that we're going to get to. It's like, the right accuses everybody else of things that they have done, right? So like when you hear
I've heard it phrased, John, as every accusation is a confession, basically.
Yeah. So like when you have Robin Voss saying that he isn't going to give anybody in the UW system raises, really cost of living adjustments, because he doesn't support diversity, equity, inclusion, which he says is divisive. The reality is, they're the ones who want to divide us by not allowing us to have those resources for our students. So it's complete projection of the things that they actually want. They talk about there being a free speech crisis on campus. The free speech crisis is coming from them trying to stop us from talking about certain things. It's not coming from us, right? So it's par for the course, man. It really is.
Can you imagine if the employees and faculty of the UW schools formed a union and went on strike? Like in Madison, that would be disastrous. There'd be garbage piling up everywhere. There's so many services that are provided to communities outside of just education by the UW system. And I just think that's something that they should think about when they're deciding.
Universities of Wisconsin.
Sorry, the USW.
The USW. Yes, gentlemen.
I can and have imagined it, Aaron. And let's just say I can't say very much except that like there are a lot of people in the state who work for the UW system who are collectively imagining that right now.
I can imagine.
Folks, you are listening to Town Call. We are joined by Professor John Shelton. If you want to join us on the phone lines, you can do so, 844-967-2789. Before we dive into the heart of what's going on in the university, I almost did it myself. I almost said UW system instead of Universities of Wisconsin. Let's head over to the phone lines. We've got Joe in Madison calling in. Joe, what's on your mind this Thursday afternoon?
I'm a bit despondent, and I need to be cheered up, and that's with the news that you may be coming to a close with your show tomorrow, which makes me despondent. I think what you've been putting forth is absolutely wonderful. I have been apprised of issues such as the stadium issue and childcare in Wisconsin, and most importantly, education in the state, which you do with this episode that you have right now with Professor Shelton. Really good stuff, really packed with information and thoughtful. So I really, really hope that there's a way that this can be reconfigured or somehow reimagined and placed again into the lineup on civic media, because I think it's absolutely essential, the topics that you have been touching on and the ways in which you do it. And particularly, both of you are terrific, and you also, Professor Shelton. But, Will, I really wanted to express the fact that you got this energy, and it's very engaging. And I think part of what is pleasing to me as a person over the age of 65 is it feels like the youth in the state are still here, and they're ready to pick up the baton that is Wisconsin's progressive history and keep going forward through this bleak, bleak valley that we're traveling through right now. And any rate, so I wanted to have those words said before you start rounding out. So keep going somehow, guys. Come find a way to keep going, because it's really, really important. I really treasure it. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Joe. Obviously, we're a radio program, but if you're watching on the stream, you might see me blushing a little bit, because that was incredibly kind of you to say, Joe, and I very much appreciate that. We're going to do what we can. Civic Media will still be here covering all of the news and notes of the day. Wisconsin, it's a beautiful and diverse landscape full of talented individuals across all demographics and all walks of life. News is going to continue developing, stories will continue being told, and Wisconsin will continue to be at the spotlight as civic media continues leading the charge, standing at the forefront of local radio, providing in-depth coverage of our great state and the many communities within every single day. So thank you so much for the call, Joe. We're going to continue on the phone lines. We got George from Wausau. George, do you have a question, comment, or concern for Professor Shelton today?
Hello?
Hey, George, we can hear you.
Yes, your show's getting canceled.
Unfortunately, with the schedule changes, we will be wrapping up on Friday, yes. So this will be our last office hours segment.
At least you guys lasted longer than CNN Plus.
That is accurate.
Like
that is accurate,
tubies,
George.
As well, or whatever the what was the short video format thing too. I forget what that one was. Is that Tubi?
Tubi
sounds still around.
Right.
No, there Tubi's was a different one. Yeah, Tubi's still around. I can't think of what the platform.
Don't you
was.
Be talking about Vine?
No,
you are
no,
not
no,
going to
no,
come
no,
on
no,
my
no,
on my
no,
radio
no, no,
show
no.
and talk about
that,
Vine.
They promoted it everywhere. Okay. They spent like $1 billion to promote it, and then all of a sudden it was like short format. It was like 5 minute episodes.
Yeah, started with a Q.
Yeah.
Well, I remember seeing ads for that, and it's completely vanished from...
I was going to say, I can't remember what the name is, but there was something that was... We lasted longer than that, too. Many,
Quibi?
Many times longer.
An American short-form streaming platform
Quibi.
That generated content
for
viewing on mobile
devices. I was close, but Quibi.
What was it?
It's Quibi, Quibi, an American short-form streaming platform generating content for viewing on mobile devices, founded in L.A. in August of 2018 by, of course, Jeffrey Katzenberg. Led by Meg Whitman, its CEO, the service raised $1.75 billion from investors. And the successor is Roku, so...
Roku was before and after, though. I think Roku like bought it for a hot second, and then
their content library was sold to Roku. Okay. Yes, but
yeah,
it was
for
less than $100 million.
Right? They raised like $1 billion plus, spent it all on ads, and then we're like, okay, we're done. we can't do it anymore.
Yep.
So that is better outcome than that. But going over to the universities of Wisconsin and the state of them right now, Professor Shelton, we've got...
The used W, Luke, please get it right.
It just sounds like it's a used W. You're going to like a used car lot and you buy something that's a W then. I don't know.
All of use at the UW system.
Used W is definitely on brand for like where we are right now. Our
right.
campuses are falling apart. Our students are being completely shortchanged. So, yeah.
Those $500,000 rebrands aren't going to come up with themselves, Luke. I would like for you to please respect the rebrand, okay? That's a lot of money that could have gone to, I don't know, say the University of Wisconsin Oshkosh, Professor Sheldon, who announced layoffs, drawing a response from faculty and staff union as, quote, a devastating week. The university announced 140 layoffs and 76 voluntary retirements, according to the United Faculty and Staff of Oshkosh Local Number 6506. They released the following statement. This has been a devastating week for us at UW Oshkosh. These losses seriously impact crucial units at our university and will make it difficult for us to offer the same programs and services we provided in the past. Those of us who remain will be asked to pick up the slack, and although we remain committed to providing a high-quality educational experience, we fear we will not be able to serve our students as well moving forward. It's a conversation that we've had time and time again, Professor Sheldon. So many of these teachers doing their absolute best to educate the next generation of American workers, but they don't have the ability to do so because we're cutting resources from them across the board for ridiculous reasons. You know, you want to talk about the rebrand, that would fit right under this umbrella. But as somebody who is at the front lines of this, could you dive into some of the context around why this is so impactful?
Yeah, well, so first of all, the cuts were even bigger than that, Will, because they also left, I think, 60 or 70 jobs unfilled. So there's going to be about 300 positions that will be lost there. And that's something like a fifth of their entire workforce there. And
according to the statement, it's more than 20% of the workforce. Right. That is astounding.
Astounding. And, you know, the union there has been organizing and fighting back for some time. And so I'll just give a quick shout out to David Seamer, Stephanie Spehar, Paul Van Auken, and Misty McPhee, and others too, who have been really organizing. They organized an incredible rally on campus a couple weeks ago, pushing admin to make cuts at the top instead of cutting the lowest paid workers on campus. This is part of a long-term effort to essentially go to war on the UW system, right? I mean, it's been over a decade that we've had diminishing budgets. Actually started during the Doyle administration, really with furloughs. I mean, there was an economic downturn then. It's inexcusable now with a $4 billion surplus. But then, of course, the right has weaponized DEI as a way to, you know, effectively like try to diminish the long-term future for our students to limit the opportunities they have. It's absolutely tragic. It's uncalled for. And it's going to be overworked faculty and staff who are left trying to provide the services our students need. And students are fired up about this. You know, when I was down there for that demonstration a couple weeks ago, there were more students. I mean, there were a lot of faculty and staff. There were probably 300-400 people, and the majority of them were students. They understand they're being shortchanged. And so we're not going to take it anymore. We're going to be fighting back, faculty, staff, and students, because you know, our legislators have proven they've abrogated their responsibility. Our admin, through this, like spending all this money on a rebrand, have shown they don't have any ideas that are actually going to help us. And so it's kind of on us to save our UW system, and we're going to do it.
That is Professor John Shelton joining us for Office Hours on this Thursday edition. We've got one more segment left in the day. If you want to join, 844-967-2789. You're listening to Town Call across Civic Media.
Welcome all, welcome back. This is Town Call, a brand new approach to homegrown radio. If you'd like to participate in today's forum, give us a call or shoot us a text, 844-967-2789. The professor is in. It is office hours on a Thursday afternoon, and we are talking about education in the state of Wisconsin, the UW system itself. And John, you made an excellent point during the break that I want to give you the chance to kind of further explain, but I'll set you up with this quote when discussing Robin Voss's aggressive attempts to block funding to the UW system if they do not remove DEI initiatives, committee member Senator Howard Markling, a Republican, broke away from Voss's position in this regard in a statement after the vote. He said he was, quote, very disappointed, unquote, that UW pay raises, pay increases weren't scheduled for a vote. Quote, the local employees on our campus should not be penalized for policy decisions made by leaders of the university system, unquote. This is something that employees across the UW system are now going to be facing and fighting over because the legislature has promised to block all raises for UW employees until the school system cuts this so-called DEI spending. Frankly, it's unacceptable. And John, I want to give you the chance to kind of to further contextualize that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, so this is the kind of stuff Jamel Bowie, columnist for the New York Times, talks about when he calls the legislature in Wisconsin the most authoritarian in the country. You know, you have Republicans on the JFC, you know, who are basically saying, Joint Finance Committee, who are basically saying, like, you know, UW employees deserve they're really cost of living adjustments, right? Because even the 4% raise isn't going to keep pace with inflation. So it's getting us closer to being there. But, you know, because Robin Voss has this, you know, sort of these political aspirations, he wants to drive a wedge between us, wants to capitalize on these culture war things that Republicans have been doing in Florida and elsewhere. You know, he wants to punish everybody on campus, on every campus, from getting a raise that every other state employee is getting. Right. And you know what? Like, you want to, I am not, you can look up my salary. It's all public information. I am not like drowning in money, right? Like, I could definitely use a raise, but here's the thing. You want to punish me because you think I'm a liberal professor or whatever it is you think about me, that, you know, that's one thing. But I think about the custodians on our campus. You know, I think about the admin assistants, like the admin assistant in my department who is woefully underpaid, who is not going to get this pittance of a raise, 4%, which, you know, is, in spite of it not being enough to keep up with inflation, is still a big deal to people. And to punish them for that is so monstrous. You know, you have to be just utterly cynical and utterly bereft of any kind of moral core to do that to somebody. And that's where we are.
Well, we got you, Will. Your microphone is muted. If we're trying to.
Oh, that is my apologies. I must have accidentally bumped the microphone. But we got a very interesting text, Professor Shelton, from Matt from Germantown. Wants to know, how do you approach colleagues who are against DEI in a university setting?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, I think the reason that you hear this kind of opposition to DEI is largely because people don't know what it is. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, we haven't done a great job in the UW system of talking about it, particularly UW administration. I'll be honest, they just haven't done a very good job of explaining what it is. DEI is diversity, equity, and inclusion. And what it means is that you provide resources for the diverse kinds of students you have on campus, right? So those could be, you know, that could be making sure there's a prayer room for Somali students. We have a growing number of Somali students here at UW-Green Bay. That could mean a space where LGBTQ students can go and be around, you know, other people who are LGBTQ and ensure that people are thinking about things like their pronouns, which is like an exhausting thing for LGBTQ students, many of them to have to deal with. It actually includes services for military vets, you know, having a space for military vets on campus to, you know, kind of only be around other military vets and get support for, you know, what it means to be a student at a college where you're a non-traditional student and you've had combat experience. That's all diversity, equity, inclusion is. Unfortunately, it's been weaponized and turned into something else because people like Voss want to divide us from each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So when you basically make that case, I think most people get it.
Yeah. And it's been used though as a punching bag for and a target for Voss. And he seems to believe that it is going to be a winning tactic for him because he's continuing and doubling down on it. We saw that it was a major point of contention in the budget negotiations earlier this year. And then after the budget was passed and these raises approved, he's continuing to use it as a sticking point. Already cut $32 million out of the universities of Wisconsin's budget, which was woefully under what was requested by both the system and the governor. But now continuing on this fight over DEI, trying to make it a point of contention. All right, Professor. We've gone through a lot of the meat and potatoes. Now we can have a little bit fun. We got Thursday night football kicking off.
Luke, I got to add quick. Okay. We talk about how all these issues are intertwined. First of all, I can't help but chuckle every time you say universities. Like, that just, it just does not feel right.
I know.
I hate it.
I know. It's weird.
But we talk about how these issues are intertwined, right? Education is the cure for ignorance in almost every applicable situation. If people are given the opportunity to learn about what this actually is, as John elaborated on DEI, you sit down and you say, this is what it is, this is what we're trying to do. Give them the chance to hear firsthand the reality of the situation. People very frequently agree with this. Perhaps this has something to do with why education has been so systemically defunded, because it's easier to manipulate those who do not have a proper understanding of the situation. So, John, we're going to go to one final episode of our Fantasy Flyers and Labor Locks of the Week. I love the joke you and I make off screen. Can you imagine the couple of people sitting around like, oh yeah, we got to listen to these guys rant about politics for 40 minutes until we can get to the good stuff, the fantasy locks.
All my parlays
are riding on Professor Shelton seconds, this week.
Yeah.
The 90 seconds. Well, last week, Professor, you went with Justin Fields, unfortunately got injured, dropped to 7.4 points, quarterback 29 spot. Well, his running back, Deonta Foreman, 7.45 points for running back 29. Not a great week for you, Professor. I went with Cooper Kupp, who dropped a 29.8 spot as the wide receiver 4, and Isaiah Pacheco at a 17.3, running back 14. I had a good week. But John, who is your lock and who is your flyer for this week?
All right, first of all, I just want to say that my pick of Breece Hall a few weeks ago, Breece Hall is going to be a top five running back the rest of the way. I was a little premature, but I was there. Zach Evans, running back for the Rams, is my flyer of the week. They don't seem to have any other healthy running backs, and the Rams are set up, I think, to have him do a lot of the workload. And then my lock of the week is Stephon Diggs. He's cooking with Josh Allen. That should be a show, maybe. And they're playing the Patriots, and they're going to run roughshod all over them. Big week for Stephon Diggs.
Excellent. Luke, do you have a lock and flyer, or do you want me to take it?
My lock is Devontae Adams, the wide receiver, taking on those Chicago Bears, should be able to demolish the secondary. And my flyer is another wide receiver, Christian Watson, finally, hopefully healthy, coming off the Packers bye week and playing Denver.
Interesting. I'll go with Kenneth Walker against the abysmal Arizona defense. And I'll take Zay Flowers against the Detroit Lions as my flyer. I was thinking Hollywood Brown in a potential shootout. But, you know, we'll see. Maybe we got to do a defense in the future. This is Town Call. We'll be back tomorrow with Headlines of the Week. Talk to you then.